Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you want legendary service,
if you want sweeter discounts,
save by bundling auto and home with insurance.
Hello and welcome to this defensive focus pod. We're going to be talking about how to stop your opponent exploiting that broken defensive line you see so often at the moment, as well as defensive pressing, defending the cutback, player switching, the new champ structure, and plenty more. I'm your host, Ben. You're listening to the Foot Weekly podcast out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and made possible by the pod's patron supporters. Hello, it's week 16. It's the Gameplay Pod on the main feed this week. On this episode, we have a group of guests who are going to make this podcast particularly interesting. First of all, we have regular and foot legend, Air Japes FIFA. Hello and happy new year to you.
Happy New Year to you too, Ben. Sometimes I can't decide what being a legend is called. It's like, yeah, I was there once upon a time, and now does that make me real old?
Yeah, maybe, but I think you wear it well. You know, sort of a godfather of foot kind of position, like, I don't know, Ferguson at United currently or something like that.
Mm.
A legend in a kind of mythical way.
Sure. I'll be your unicorn. No, happy to be on talking gameplay. I've been enjoying it lately and, you know, playing a more aggressive style, which I always find to be fun. So excited to talk about that.
Yeah, nice. Looking forward to that. And we also have with us, people will have heard his story, if you like, over the course of a number of podcasts this cycle, a game critic and game consultant, Brammers. Hello, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be involved in this, literally the best gameplay podcast of 2022.
The best one yeah, yet.
Exactly. Very excited to talk about Foot Champs and my trials and tribulations there, which have improved somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. So for those who don't know, we did an extended podcast about Foot Champs, playoffs, finals, the impacts that had and how it needed changing. And then we spoke to you just after the changes had actually happened to see what your thoughts were on them. We discussed the rewards, things like that. And now I suppose you've had, what, 2 weeks of playing the new champ structure, playoffs and finals. So
yeah,
interested
yeah.
to hear your thoughts on that. And potentially helping in everyone's playoffs and finals will be advice from our next guest. And that is a coach from probably one of the biggest success stories of FIFA esports, and that is Team Hullet. Yep, back on the podcast, we have Renzo. Welcome.
Thank you for having me once again, and excited to talk about the FIFA 22 gameplay, because it's a whole different situation than last year.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I think it is definitely different, isn't it?
And yeah, well, it's also very interesting to see, because we've only had like one competitive tournament yet, and we're already like 3 months in to the cycle. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite interesting to see the differences in FIFA 21 and FIFA 22, what it's become. There's way more different play styles now.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to start by talking about something that is different this year. Normally, we'd start with some player reviews, things like that. But actually, on the content pod this week, the supporter episode, we talk a lot about the gems that are around at the moment. There have been plenty that are still available on the market from Winter Wildcards, we'll discuss, as well as headliners and a bit of investing advice, things like that. But for now, we'll start with this, which is, for me, one of the most frustrating things in the game at the moment, and something that I think would be helpful to get your advice on, Renzo. And it's something that we had Tom Stokes talking about very early in the cycle. He'd identified the fact that when you have players on getting behind or use the direct passing tactic, it means that it opens up loads of space in front of your defense and the defensive line goes completely out of shape. It opens up driven passing options and is just a massive pain to play against. I think people are seeing it more and more now, identifying what it is rather than just sort of defensive lapses. It is a very specific issue with players following runs when they shouldn't be, and basically asking, I suppose, what can be done about it, apart from, of course, a patch at some point, hopefully.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you're saying that, because like last year in FIFA 21, everybody was complaining about 70 depth being, or like 7 depth, I think it was back then, being so overpowered because of these automatic offside traps, right? Like the AI would do offside traps for you and it was really difficult sometimes to break down. And not going to lie, I didn't like that either, but it was a thing in FIFA 21. And now we are in the situation where the backline just keeps running with these strikers. And yeah, that is not ideal either, because people have to manually constant offside trap if they want to prevent it. And yeah, offside trap, we all know it's quite risky. You can get beat, or if you mistime it and somebody plays a missile into a striker with the R1 X pass, that is really overpowered as well. You're just on a one-on-one situation, and the goalkeeper movement is also not that fast in this game. So it's pretty much a guaranteed goal, I think. And it's very hard this year to kind of defend against somebody that, for example, plays 4-3-2-1 or 4-1-2-1-2 second variation, where there is like two or three players constantly in and around the box. And it can be very frustrating as well. But I think in competitive play, you are not seeing, there's only, I think, one European player right now that has been doing very well with the 4-1-2-1-2 narrow. And apart from that, it's still usually 4-4-2, 4-3-2, and 4-2-3-1 that are really doing well. So I think in like casual play, it's because not too many players know about the offside trap or master the offside trap too well. It's that this situation happens more often than not, where there indeed are like free strikers, like you said, on getting behind, getting deep into the box, and the defensive line is just like almost around the goalkeeper. And yeah, it's an issue, but I think in competitive play, it's not been that much of an issue yet, because most pro players adapted to it.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't watch loads of competitive play, but whenever I watch it, I'll see players doing the offside trap, even in past FIFAs, right? It's always been something pros have done, really. Sometimes from kickoff, even to prevent the kickoff glitch previously and things like that. So they're very aware of it as a thing. Whereas actually, I myself probably, even though I'm playing at quite a good level, like I hardly ever have used it in past FIFAs. And now I'm finding that I have to use it constantly, basically, to stop my opponent exploiting the space in front of the defense. And the best way to do that is with the offside trap down on the D-pad. I don't know whether there's any specifics you can suggest about using that, because as you said, it can be quite dangerous if you just spam it without thinking. But in some situations, it feels like that's maybe what you have to do.
Yeah, well, it's basically what you say. It's if somebody knows how to use this very well, or he's playing a 4-3-2-1 or a 4-1-2-1-2, you almost are forced indeed to constantly use offside traps. And yeah, I hope like it gets patched, but in a way, I'm not seeing them patching it. But yeah, offside traps is hard to explain, because you always have to make sure that the opponent is kind of facing the goal with his back, if that makes sense. So he's either turning around, or he's out down the wing and he's finding an option in the center, because the offside trap really pretty much uses like, what is it, maybe 5 to 10 meters. Yeah, I speak in meters, sorry, but like they're pushing up, and in some situations there isn't really a chance for him to, or for your opponent to get in behind, even if the offside trap is a little tricky. But if your opponent has like these two or three strikers constantly running in, and with this R1 pass, sometimes it's just a missile into the strikers, like I said, and it makes it very hard. And especially for casual players that might not be the greatest defensive or like the greatest players in course of switching. And yeah, that's why I think it can be a very frustrating game for players that, that for example, in past years would get like gold one and they face an elite player. It can be very frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it totally makes sense. And interestingly enough, you're saying about the 4-1-2-1-2 narrow, and I know that Brammers, you yourself have had a lot of success with that, right? And, you know, I mean, I think that is the thing. It is, with the way that the defense works, very, very effective this year if people aren't using the offside trap. And I think you certainly found that over the new and improved champ structure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, my switch in formation coincided with new champ's arrival, and it's just completely transformed my fortunes and level of entertainment in FIFA 22, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, I switched. I typically played a 4-4-2. It had always worked really well for me in FIFA 21, but I hadn't really adapted particularly well. And I found myself struggling to build up well and whatnot. And then I can't remember which guest it was. It was on a recent pod who mentioned that, I think it might have been Ranners, who mentioned the 4-1-2-1-2 narrow and how on balance the cam will drop back into a sort of CM position on defense, which gives you that solidity. And I just thought, that sounds interesting, because I do need those two midfielders who can sit there in front of the defense. So I thought I'd just give it a go. And honestly, it was like a revelation. When I'm defending, it feels much easier to maintain the defensive structure than in the 4-4-2 I was using, because when I lose the ball, I can usually use one of the outside cams as the kind of first defensive player, rather than the fullback or the CDM or one of the CDMs. So the space in the middle still stays very tight for them to try to play into. And I find it a lot easier to maintain discipline with my fullbacks and not commit them because of that, because I've got those options defensively. The thing I found defensively is you really need excellent box-to-box style outside cams, sort of midfielders for this to work. So they have to be really
good. Yeah, so we should say actually you do mean centre mids, not cams, because I already said cams a few times.
Yes, sorry, I do, yeah.
Right centre mid, left centre mid, yeah.
That is correct. Sorry, in my head I'm thinking of it like the 4-2-2-2, but you're right, it's the CMs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've got Inform KDB on one side, and I've got this guy, this Dutch guy, this 90-rated Ruud Gullit. I'm not sure if anyone else has heard of him. But yeah, for some reason, my pack luck was insane this year, so I had loads of coins. And I thought, well, everyone used this guy, I'll give him a go. And obviously, he's crazy. But the point about them both is that they have 5-star weak foot, 4-star skills. They're perfectly capable of playing as a defensive player as well as an attacking player. And it just means that when I'm on defense, I feel so much more solid and I've got this platform. And then going forward, I mean, the direct passing thing is the critical bit, I think, as some people have said. And the thing I'm always looking for as I cross the halfway line is that run of the striker taking two of the defenders with him. I motion as though I'm going to go down the line. I wait to see that the defender is buying it. And then I'll do like a Berber spin or something or a ball roll scoop and cut inside. And if you can do that with the striker advancing, there's this channel that opens up just inside the opposing half, straight through to the attacker. And if you just play a through ball, like quite a heavy through ball, the arc of the ball takes it between the defenders and you get a reliable shot off quite a lot of the time. And honestly, I probably score one of those goals every game, every other game, even in champs, which is really mad. But it's very satisfying because it feels like I found my thing.
Yeah, I've noticed that it's just become so, so prevalent as a formation over the last couple of weeks. And it's funny, actually, because Japes, I know it's a formation that you've notoriously found the worst to play against, right? Or at least the play style anyway. And you were saying, actually, that you've been quite enjoying your FIFA recently. I was wondering whether this that formation's prevalence may mean you've been enjoying it less, but I guess that doesn't seem to have been the case.
The only time that I find that formation like really, I would say, pretty annoying is when they play on, I believe it's like the long ball tactic. And it's just because I play a three back and I often find that just leaves me like really, really exposed.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's quite good in the sense that the three at the back can be quite good against the narrow because it's defensively narrow. But then if they play direct like long ball, then you can end up with that 3-on-3 situation, right?
I mean, 3-on-3, and they've got pacey attackers running at a line that's like maybe a little bit caught out. And this is, it's one of my weaknesses. I tend to be over like hyper aggressive in all situations. And so rather than trying to like maybe make the smart move there and just, you know, thwart the attack, I decide to go try to take it away from him, and I lose the ball, and you know, the rest is history.
Were you saying you're playing a 3-4-1-2 now rather than the 3-5-2?
Yeah, I want it to be more aggressive.
Okay. So does that just push the center mids forwards, basically?
Yeah, it pushes the CMs forward. And I would say part of that is because of the copious amounts of 4-4-2 players that I play against.
Mm.
And I find that the 3-4-1-2 does better than the 3-5-2 against that.
And we're talking about the 3-5-2 before, and you said you were going to put them on Twitter. I think with the Christmas period and being busy, you haven't ended up doing it. So I'll pester you about putting the 3-4-1-2 up there. And of course, it will then also go into the tactic bank for supporters as well. With that tactic, I know you like to have some kind of pressing element to your tactics, always talking about that aggressive style. Have you found that any of those pressing options actually work for you? Because I feel like they're quite difficult to execute.
Yeah, I play press on heavy touch, but I sometimes play on possession loss, but rarely.
That's interesting because I did like press after possession loss last year, but this year I found it a bit of a struggle. Maybe press after heavy touch is a better option than possession loss, perhaps?
Possession loss just is susceptible to counters against really top players. So I'd say that's like the biggest differentiator there.
Yeah, and then have you found that it activates enough? Because I felt like when I've tried it briefly, I didn't feel like it was happening that much. I don't know.
Yes and no at the same time. Like for the most part, I'd say yeah. I think it does a pretty good job of doing it when it should. Okay. And like really, I find that happens more often when I'm playing against these guys that think they're overconfident in possession and trying to do something with their back line, right? And they get themselves into a tight spot. They take a heavy touch with a center back or something, and boom, my team is ready to roll.
Yeah.
And that's really ultimately like when I'm happiest with it.
Mm.
So I don't know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. And I think Brammers, you had something you wanted to ask, right?
So a question about the 3-4-1-2. One of the problems I've had defending with three backs this year has been just the cutback is so effective that when I have people running at me down the line, I find with a CB, they're a bit too, they're not as agile and able to cope with the trickery as the fullbacks would be. So I'm always trying to show players inside, and I find that much easier to do with a fullback. Like, how do you cope with the prevalence of cutbacks with three center backs rather than having the fullbacks?
Don't be afraid to tackle, like use the tackle button out wide. Like generally, I think people get in trouble when they try to get into this like jockeying match with the tricky players. And sometimes like I use the showdown Zula, and I don't know what his base agility is, but like he tackles everything when I use the tackle button. Not always when I don't. I also have my outside mids on comeback. And so part of it is I think you're, when you get in those situations, I think you're just trying to stall people. But I do this thing where I like sprint my outside CB to get in between the attacker and the goal, and then use the right stick to switch to my central CB to try to cut out the passing lane that I think they're going to take. Now, does it bite me sometimes? Of course it does. Do I get a lot of like pretty free interceptions? Totally.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, Renzo, have you got any particular advice? I know it is an effective way at high level to score and create chances. I mean, it is, of course, in real football as well. It's quite realistic because you look at City, they're scoring like that all the time or quite a high percentage.
It's actually interesting to me that that you guys are talking about this because the cutback is like so effective in this game. It's unreal. Like the wing play is... I remember... probably the first month, so let's say October, that everybody was in a competitive play, was like trying to figure out the game, and there was not that many players scoring from down the wing. The R1 pass was pretty effective, and the cutback, as you guys call it, from the back line, it almost always reaches the target. But I don't know if you guys use the lofted pass a lot, the double X pass, double triangle. That is still like one of the most effective ways from down the wing, cutting inside to your strikers with that pass. And yeah, just then you just press the shoot button and it's almost a guaranteed goal.
The little dink pass, yeah. The little bouncing. Yeah,
where you pop it up. Yeah. Oh, so annoying.
Yeah, it's so annoying. You can't intercept it.
Yeah. When people use those little, like, I suppose they're like dinked through balls. Those are the ones that drive me absolutely insane because I feel like I'm in a good position and my center back just is like, nah. You feel really, really helpless.
Yeah, but I feel like Jabe's kind of already made a pretty fair point on saying that you should always tackle. Like, I think whenever I go down the wing in, for example, FUT Champs or Division Rivals with Neymar or a Messi or whoever, and people are kind of afraid to challenge them because they think they might get, like, let's say you do an Elastico and you get past him. But that's fine, because if it's down the byline, like, there's not that much that you can do instantly, especially if you defend, like Japes kind of said, with switching to the passing lane. But if somebody's going down the byline, feel free to tackle him, because, yeah, what's going to end up happening, he might get past there, but then you still have a chance. And I think a lot of people will just try to cut out the passing lane, and just let people dribble down the back line, actually, it is. And then it's too easy to find a cutback. So I think that's probably something that people should work on, just being a bit more aggressive on those wingers, because trying to cut out passing lanes in this game is very hard in general, I think, because the R1 pass, like I said, it's too accurate sometimes that you even feel like you're in between, but you have these little dings, you have the L1, R1 through balls that even you feel like you're covering a through ball that can go through anyway. And even more advanced players, or like really great players, they use player locks a lot, and it's quite hard on this game, I feel like, to just keep cutting out the passing lanes constantly. So I think James made a pretty fair point that you have to try and use the tackle button a lot more, and just being a bit more aggressive one-on-one defending.
Well, that's something I've really noticed. Whenever I play a top player, someone who's really good, they'll always have their defensive player, whether it's their fullback, centre-back, whoever's in the wide areas, right on top of your player with the ball, really, really close to them, blocking their route whichever way they turn. And I think that stops even the pass coming through if you're close enough.
Yeah, it's like a mix of predicting where somebody's going to pass. And especially on this game, because second man press was introduced, you probably discussed this a lot earlier in these podcasts. But the key thing in FIFA 22, I think, is that you always just want to get your players as close as possible to the opponent. And then you could still switch, press second man press, and the guy that you personally switch to will be the one that cuts out a passing lane, for example, and the one that you switched off but brought close to the opponent, you can let the second man press button do something. And that will always kind of force the opponent to dribble back or make a decision. And then, yeah, it's just up to your own speed of your fingers that you can switch back and make an interception yourself. But that's how you, if you look at, probably the top pros, but any pro in general, the amount of player switching that they do in a defensive sequence, it's probably unheard of for a lot of players. But yeah, if you're asking yourself, why am I conceding so many goals through maybe down the wing or even through balls, it's probably to do with your own switching and how long you are controlling one player. Because I think better players, usually even better players than, for example, myself or even some of my talents that I coach, they usually are a bit more quicker defensively. And I mean, defense wins championships, I guess, right? And if you keep defending very well, you're going to end up getting the ball a lot more often as well. So
The toughest opponents that I have, I find, are incredible at player switching. They'll like bait you into a pass and have already switched to the player, like to intercept it with the next player. I don't know how to train that, but...
Well... We actually train on that as well. And what? I think if you'd explain that simply, is that you'd always have to, if you're in this defensive position, let's say an opponent is playing a 4-4-2. He's in control with his center mids on your half. And you see these two strikers that are in the box, right? Or like around the edge of the box. You can only defend one pretty much. So what do you want to do? You want to either prevent him from making that pass, so you're going to try and move your center backs a little bit next to him, or you can actually pull a center mid, put pressure on that ball holder, and then already switch to that striker. And then it's up to the odds, but there is usually an angle that you can predict that he can't make and that he can make. So it's constantly this movement that you have to try to predict, okay, what pass is able to get given pretty much. And the R1 pass makes it a lot harder, right? Like I said, to always be predicting those passes. But it's actually constantly, trying to develop your own skill of bringing a player towards the opponent to just let him dribble. Because like I said, kind of in the example of when somebody's down the wing, it's not that much of an issue if somebody like dribbles back down the wing or in the center of the pitch with his midfielders. But you just want to prevent him as much of reaching the striker. So you should always try to let that second man press, put pressure on the ball holder, and have the other player that you are selecting cut out the most dangerous pass. And I think that's probably the most crucial thing, that people start recognizing what is the most dangerous pass that my opponent can make.
Well, I think player switching generally is probably one of the biggest ways that you can improve at the game defensively, but is also one of the hardest things to experiment with or try different approaches with, because it is so fundamental to your defensive ability. If you try to do something that you're not used to, it can basically be a guaranteed goal. So it is a challenge, but can be extremely rewarding if you're willing to put in the time to learn it, perhaps outside of competitive play, or just willing to take the losses or concede goals, I suppose. Because at least with the current system, you could potentially, you know, when you get to a checkpoint, you could then experiment and try and maybe be a bit more aggressive or more active in your player switching. Is it something that you do much, Brammers, in terms of using the right stick to switch between players rather than the L1, LB button?
I think I probably do it like half and half. If I see a player that I know I definitely want that player and he doesn't have the little, the other indicator over his head, I will try and flick it to that person. But I would say I probably get it wrong as much as I get it right. Sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. One thing I would say though, like thinking about it just now, I don't have the same level of frustration with this year's game regarding player switching as I did the previous year. And that may be because I'm getting better at it, or it may be that the game is better at player switching. I don't really know. But yeah, I definitely use it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if I'm a few goals up or a few goals down, I do use it. But in those situations, sometimes I'll just try and be a bit more persistent about using it rather than using the L1 or LB button. And I think over time it is steadily improving, but there's still quite some way to go. It is a really important tool. On that, there are plenty more important tools to be discussed in the second half. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a second. Hello, listener, time for a break. And in this week's break, the first of 2022, I want to reflect on the exciting fact that this is the sixth calendar year the Foot Weekly Pod is going into, which is really amazing because if you've been listening for a couple of years, you'll remember when there was a time a few years ago where Foot Weekly was on the ropes. It wasn't weekly because I was too busy. I had to take on other work to support myself. And then a listener suggested starting Patreon. And well, it's been uphill since then. So a huge thank you to the Foot Weekly community for making this podcast possible. And if you're someone out there thinking, well, actually, I could spare a few quid a month to get an extra podcast every week and support the pod, keep it going, then you can do so. It's just £3 a month and you get double the podcast content, including this week's content podcast, next week's gameplay podcast, both supporter episodes. They'll be on the supporter feed, which is super easy to add into your podcast providing apps, and it's very quick and easy to sign up to support too. You can do that over on Patreon, just £3 a month, and there's a 24,000 FIFA point or voucher equivalent giveaway running at the moment. Head over to bit.ly/podxmas22 or just search support Foot Weekly. If you do decide to do it, then a huge thank you for making Foot Weekly weekly. Let's get back into the podcast. So getting back into the second half, we're going to start with a little chat about champs, because we've followed, Brammers, your journey throughout the cycle and the struggles of not being able to qualify, and talking about how the system really had to change, and eventually it did change. We caught up with you just as it changed and before you'd given it a try, and you and many others have now had a few weeks with it. So I was interested to hear how things have been going for you, and whether the changes to the rewards and of course playoffs have made And of course, playoffs have made a difference.
Yeah, so when we spoke about it before, we were pretty optimistic about it overall. And to be honest, it's played out as well as I could have hoped. I mean, the first time I did it was pretty much as soon after season three went live, and it was kind of late in the week. And I won my first four matches in a row. And I think the second time was quite similar. And for science, this weekend, I actually tried it on Sunday to see whether it was, you know, the brutal struggle that it had been in the past. And I ended up going 4-3 and getting through reasonably comfortably. And I think that the thing that this has done, which is really great, it's meant that you no longer feel like you're on a knife edge constantly as soon as you lose a game. Because it, previously, you know, let's say you lost your first game, suddenly you're like, oh, I've got to win 5 out of 8. And, you know, mentally, that's just really draining. It starts to feel like when you're grinding the last few games of champs rather than the first few. But now it's completely different. Like, you lose one and you're like, eh, you know, I need 4 out of 9. Like, it'll be fine. And it is fine. I feel slightly hesitant to be over praising it because this has coincided with me finding my groove a bit more in FIFA 22. So who knows how much of a factor that is, but also, you know, I know it has just moved it down the line to people who are probably Silver One or whatever on that kind of boundary. But certainly feels like it's, you know, for people who were struggling at the level I was struggling, it definitely feels like a much better thing. It's much less stressful. You can play it at different times of the week and probably still get in. I wouldn't like take the mickey and play it at, like, on Sunday like I did just for thrills, but it doesn't seem to be a huge issue, the playoffs. And the great thing about that, like the really nice knock-on effect of that, is that finals feels important again. Like, you're in there, you haven't used up all of your like FIFA stress energy for the week. So you go in, you feel quite fresh, and you actually, like for me anyway, the feeling is back. The weekend league feeling is back. You know, we have those tight competitive games. I'm pushing for 9 wins, then it's 11. Then I just get completely stuffed by everybody trying to go for 14. But it actually feels a lot like Rivals has been feeling. Which is, you know, like competitive, fun. You can roll with the punches a bit because it doesn't matter as much. And you're not just so mentally drained from the playoff horrors. So overall, I think like it's been a positive change. I still think like...
The playoff horrors.
Yeah. I still feel as though like the system overall will need a rethink before FIFA 23. Like I don't like the playoff thing as a thing. I mean, we've talked about it endlessly. The maths involved is just... daft. Like, I know they were trying to make it so that defeats mattered or whatever, but I don't want to have to spend this much time thinking about my 4x table.
For me, that's actually the worst thing at the moment, is having, because especially now they've changed the finals ranks,
yeah,
to be more random and not be so clearly spaced out, essentially, which is good. I think it has made the mode feel better for it because they're just more steps, and so people value their games a bit more. But it does mean that it's very awkward to work out where you're gonna get and I actually messed up. I gave away a win because I clearly don't have very good maths. So you know, I think it is something that's kind of weird, and I really hope they add something to the UI which shows how many wins and losses you have.
Yeah, it would be. It's the thing that's missing for one. Well, it's one thing that's missing. It just seems strange that it's become the most challenging thing about finals for the first couple of seasons was the 4x table, and now obviously it's better, but it's still there and it's still a bit strange. One thing I've noticed is that I'm still really enjoying Rivals as well. Like, it still feels competitive and fun. It doesn't seem to have had any knock-on effect for that. So yeah, overall it feels like a massive improvement from season 2 to season 3 and how they've done that.
I think it's great, the setup in many ways, and it's just really disappointing that this was something that people who were playing Weekend League regularly last season or last cycle weren't able to experience from the start this cycle. And now hopefully they are able to finally.
Yeah, like anecdotally, like I watch and I consume a lot of FIFA content. I'm often watching Twitch or something while I work. And obviously I'm in the Discord a lot. And they just like, it was a topic of great concern all the time before they changed it. Like wherever you went, people would be moaning about playoffs. And I have not seen anyone moaning about it since then. At all, which is kind of crazy. But in the Discord now, like it feels like we don't get the same level of fire in that champs chat Discord channel anymore, which is nice. So it's more people just trying to big each other up and sharing their rewards and stuff, which is what it's going to be about, right? So it's good.
Yeah, definitely. And let us move on to another gameplay question here, moving back to that. And this one comes in from Martin. He says, could you talk a little bit more about Overload Ballside? What does it do? What effect does it have on stamina? This is one of the D-pad or directional button defensive options that you can put on. It has a really big impact on stamina, so it tends to be something I avoid, but I know some may use it. What would you say, Renzo, best used for maybe applying some pressure potentially on one particular side?
Not exactly. Overload ball sight is literally something that you can use to shut up shop, pretty much. If you use overload ball sight, pretty much what happens, like everybody, well, the word kind of says it, but all 11 players of your team, well, 10 players actually, get themselves positioned in. So if somebody's controlling the ball with his left back, for example, on your half, like you will see that probably all of your players are situated around the right center mid maximum kind of width of the opponent. Mm. So his right back and the right winger, if he has them, will be in a lot of space, but the center of the pitch is literally like crowded. Like it's so hard for your opponent, especially if you combine these with like offside traps, to actually try and reach his strikers. But what does it really do? Well, in competitive kind of terms, people use this at the end of, like, for example, a first half or a second half to prevent that last attack, which is a common thing in competitive, that they concede. Because it's, if somebody's using overload ball side, we saw that in FIFA 20 a lot in competitive, because then it wasn't a thing where the stamina would get drained that easily. It's literally just park the bus strategy, kind of drop back and also keeping your defense really tight.
So it's that's interesting, actually, because I always thought of it as like, you know, you put more pressure on because your players come across to press. But actually, obviously, that just leaves the player on the far side of the pitch open, doesn't it, for a switch of play?
Yeah. So that's why, like, for pressure play, this is well, I wouldn't say completely useless, but it's not that good to use. But this is really, like I said, it's pretty much to shut down shop or shut up shop, because in the end, you just want, if you're for example, 3-2 in the 85th minute, and you know that the last attack of the game, or like the last couple minutes of the game, your opponent is going to try and find a striker into the box, then your best bet is to put overload ball side on if you want to prevent that, because you'll just have everybody dropping back. It also causes pretty much your strikers, if you have one or two or even three, to also drop back and just be in that defensive mode. So that's why it's really good for that situation. But yeah, I won't recommend it if you're in just general play, because it's very easy for your opponent to just keep the ball moving from left to right.
Oh, that is really fascinating. I feel like I'd kind of not been using it much recently at all, and I might give it a try in those situations. Japes or Brams, have either of you used it at all this cycle?
No,
I haven't seen many people.
Funny enough, the only time that I do it is when I'm like trying to get a equalizer, and I just turn like everything on. I'm like, hit all the buttons, turn on everything, like get forward, press people, overload, do all the things, and hope for the best.
Well, you do know overload ball side is a defensive tactic, right?
Well, that's the thing. I think people associate it with team press on the D-pad and think that they're just used in conjunction. So it's good to have had you explain it and how people tend to actually use it effectively. And I know you have a number of defensive techniques on the Team Hullet YouTube channel, a video on that which explains this. So we were talking about it before we recorded, so well worth people checking that out. What I think I'll end with here, which a few people have been asking, is as it is a new calendar year and we've had a few months with the game in terms of gameplay, not had too many significant patches actually, what are our thoughts on it overall, and specifically maybe one good thing, potentially one bad thing, although I know we spent a lot of time talking about the defensive line, which definitely is for me the bad thing. But Japes, go ahead and start us off.
I would say this year, like, I quite enjoy shooting.
Okay.
I know that's like pretty generic and, you know, kind of across the board, but like I use chips, finesse, low driven. I shoot near post, I shoot far post, I take long shots, I cross. The way I shoot and try to score goals, I've never felt like there's more of a variety for me. Mm. And I find that really, really enjoyable.
Okay.
Which feels like weird to talk about, because usually there's like, oh, like you need to shoot near post, period.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the start of the game, there was like, you just try to set up for that finesse shot, right? And that hasn't felt like the case. And I also really enjoy like the variety of different formations that I feel like I can play, even though I get sick of playing against certain formations that seem to feel strong at times. Mm. You know, the fact that I'm using like a 3-4-1-2 and having like a lot of success in Elite and rolling through playoffs and doing well in like champs or whatever is, well, I guess I haven't really played enough champs, but I won the 7 games that I played with it. So
who knows? That's all you need to know.
Take that for what it is. Like, I think that's fun, because I don't think that's always been the case. I think what I find really, really annoying are these like broken individual, like on the ball mechanics, like your ball roll scoops and stuff. I don't mean like they're in the sense of they're broken. I find that like I just see them all the time at the top level, right? And it's the, you know, that even that near post or the broken corner for a while too. Like it's just the mechanic abuse I find annoying. And I feel like EA could maybe do a better job of, if they see something being used over and over and over and over and over again, maybe we just do like a quick little patch with that tuning feature, right? I don't know what the patch is, right? Like there, that would take some additional thought, but that's my feeling right now.
I agree with Jabes on shooting because I think like power shots are in a place where they're fine. They haven't been always that good, like in previous FIFAs. I think timed finishing in a way is fine as it is because it's not the easiest and it's not the hardest. But I think, in that I have to admit the finesses are a bit beyond what I would like to see because they can fly in from pretty much anywhere. If you have Messi and you time it green, it's almost a guaranteed goal. But this game just feels balanced in a way where there is a lot of things that could still like be improved and a lot of things that are overpowered. But like I said in the start, there's a lot of different ways that you can play. Like some people just constantly go down the wing and be very effective, play a lot of possession. Some of these players, and I'm talking about competitive level mainly, but also just in general, what I experience in rivals or for champs, is that some of these people just counterattack really well. Some of these people just keep 70% possession, but they do end up scoring goals with it. And it's just this variety of play, I think, that you can use this year.
And then Brannas.
So, I mean, something I like in FIFA 22, I agree, I actually really like the shooting. I like the balance of options and stuff. But something I really like, and it's probably like a small thing that isn't a big deal to most people, but the thing they added where you, I think, is it called like explosive acceleration or something? Basically the thing where if you are...
Explosive sprint.
Yeah, there you go. So more ways to change your pace quickly, which at my level, it's quite nice because you're trying to generate angles for passes and stuff a lot of the time. And just being able to like stop a little bit and but then just surge past people. Like aesthetically, it's very appealing. It reminds me of watching... like Daniel Agger coming out of defense for Liverpool, and he would just see a little gap and he would just surge into it with the ball and go past a couple of midfielders. And I like being able to do that kind of thing in this game. It feels more kind of authentic to real life. So I like that. Things I don't like, obviously Presnel Kimpembe. I think he should be deleted from the game. Everyone's going to talk about everyone who listens to this will be thinking the corner. And the corner is just, it's just silly. It's a bit of a shame that it's a thing. But also the fact that there's basically either someone does that corner or you get the ball and run up the other end and score. Like the whole corner situation is a bit silly at the moment, which is a shame. There was something else I was going to say. The lack of Thiago Alcantara special pass, I think, is embarrassing.
Do you know what? Joking aside, you're positive there. The explosive sprint is definitely up there for me. I mean, very balanced inherently, and I think has been something that has meant there is that speed boost available to people, but it can be used defensively and in attack too. And for those who don't know, just hold the sprint button and run in a straight line and you get that extra sprint speed. But on that, I think we're ready to wrap up. We've not got much time left, so thank you very much to Renzo. It's been great to have your insights again.
Thank you, it's a pleasure.
And where can people catch your content, guides, etc.?
I mean, people will find me through the Team Gullit channel. So just make sure you follow at the Team Gullit on Instagram, Twitter. And just make sure you check out our YouTube videos if you want to improve on FIFA.
Definitely. Yeah, they're great. And thank you very much as well to Brammers for sharing your FootChamps journey as well.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And finally, of course, thank you very much, Japes, for coming on the podcast. Keep an eye on your Twitter for the 3-4-1-2 tactics as well.
Yep, I'm due to share those. I don't think they're anything crazy, but maybe playing the 3-4-1-2 is a little crazy. So there's a lot of 3-5-2 players. So this is just, you know, a more aggressive version of that.
Yeah, and I think that wraps us up. So thank you very much to all our guests here. Thank you very much, listener, for tuning in. If you'd like more Foot Weekly directly into your podcast feed, then do subscribe via the various different podcast platforms. The next podcast on that feed will be the content podcast on Tuesday, and the gameplay podcast next week will be the supporter episode on Thursday. If you're a supporter, do check that out. And if you're not and you fancy it, then it is a great time. Of course, there's that 24,000 FIFA point giveaway. Just search Support Foot Weekly or head over to bit.ly/podxmas22. Thank you very much if you do consider it. And thank you very much to those supporters and Icon patrons. Dave B, DJ FIFA Player, Coach Vass, Dougie, Chris W, Hugh J, Steve C, David S, Matt L, George, Alistair, Alan G, Anthony R, Dominic, Rob P, Pobius, L, Jeff B, Christopher R, Stephen F, Michael, Tom B, Damon H, Nick Jack M, Savage P, Eric T, Roger D, Dan W, Siler P, Matt H, Harry P, Neil P, Adam G, At Pace of a Tortoise, Brian S, Andrew C, Jake G, Michael P, Springford, Zach O, Dominic G, Ruben D, Kraus, Adam R, Andy H, Mikhail L, Orion B, Mindor L, and Tim J. Plus a special thanks to Luke M, Dave B, Hugh J, Tom M, Darren W, and Pato Foot for advice and production assistance. Before I leave you though, just one more thing to add. FIFA's a bit like life, really. It has its many ups and its many downs. And if you are having a few more downs than ups in real life in these more difficult times, then please don't feel that you're alone or need to struggle on without taking action. If you go to thecalmzone.net, there's loads of resources, advice, and support, or even just a chat available to anyone who needs it. If it sounds like it could help you, then head over to thecalmzone.net. And for now, I'll catch you on the next podcast.
At Lowe's, we know you can get the job done faster if you don't have to stop and come into the store all the time. That's why we've updated our app with your business in mind. With the app, you can build quotes, easily reorder your supplies, track orders, and much more. So you can get everything you need right away, stay on the job, finish it, and get started on the next one. Download the app today, because Lowe's knows time is money. Lowe's knows pros.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.